We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey, welcome to Blue Wire. After you finish listening to this awesome Blue Wire podcast, make sure you check out the other pods in our Blue Wire family. Okay, I know, you're probably wondering, how do I do that? Well, it's simple. Go to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and search Blue Wire. Ta-da! They will all be there, so have fun listening.
Schmidt Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another episode of In the Know. We are all waiting on pins and needles for next Tuesday's lottery drop. Mason, do you have any superstitious rituals that you participate in? It doesn't have to be limited to the lottery.
The only thing I really have to go off of there is I still remember, and I feel like a lot of us do remember exactly where we were and what we were doing when the Pelicans or the Hornets won the AD draft lottery. And I was literally moving furniture into the last apartment I lived in New Orleans before I moved to Austin. And I will not volunteer to just randomly move furniture in order to guarantee we win the lottery again. So I will apologize to everybody for that.
You are extremely selfish, my man.
What about you?
I don't think I really have one. I will just tune into the lottery like everyone else, wait for it to be spoiled by Woj. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't work, then it was rigged.
Yeah, so that's a great point, because I remember last year what Woj was doing to not actually spoil the picks, but to make strong suggestions on who the teams were taking, because he knew, but he must have said that he wouldn't actually give stuff away. And now I'm curious to see if he's got a whole new set of adjectives to use for this year's draft.
Yeah, it should be pretty exciting. Now, given all of this lottery buzz, we are gearing up for what I would say is like the final stretch of Anthony Davis's stay in New Orleans. I think the next few weeks are going to make it or break it as to if he's staying or if he's leaving, or and potentially outline some of the packages that the Pelicans are going to be looking at. Now, the Celtics had an early out. They got absolutely demolished by the Milwaukee Bucks in five. Kyrie was a massive disappointment throughout that series. And he even went to the media and said, after I think it was game two, he's like, you'll never see another 8-for-22 night again. We didn't, but we did see 7-for-22. Saw 6-for-21. And then, you know, the Celtics are out. There's a lot of stuff coming out from that locker room, not necessarily from the players themselves, but people around that team saying that, I think it was Jalen Rose who went on TV and said the Celtics would help Kyrie pack his bags. And then there's other stuff about how he's not a leader and how he doesn't inspire people. Do you buy into any of that hype? Do you think that's actually coming from the Celtics camp? And does it scare you in terms of setting up a Davis trade?
Nah, I mean, the thing that scares about the Davis trade is just the raw fact that the Celtics got demolished. And if that makes Kyrie think, I mean, because I think we talked about this before the series started, and the general belief was, or maybe, I don't know, maybe it was just Blue Wire Buckets, I was talking about it, but basically the general belief was that if the series was close, maybe Kyrie is more likely to stay because he thinks that that the team is closer to competing for a title in AD away. And that could still be the case, but I mean, I think the fact that they got crushed is not a good sign. As for the all that stuff right after the series with Kyrie and the Celtics, I mean, I think it's just, we got to let the dust settle. There's a lot of emotions flying high. And I, while that might persist from some of the fans, I really think that I don't think that'll last too long from any sort of when the real decisions have to be made.
That's fair. I don't think I fully buy into the Kyrie's going to leave hype. I know everyone wants him to leave. Mm-hmm. Everyone is rooting for maximum chaos, but I don't see it. I see the Celtics still being major players for a guy like Anthony Davis. I think Danny Ainge has long recognized the value of having top 10 players on your team. And look, Kyrie's a really good player. This was his first playoffs without LeBron. He underperformed. He was targeted. The young guys aren't where they need to be to help Kyrie. Davis is. And I think if the Celtics secure Davis, there's no way the Kyrie leaves. And I think it's a winning combination, to be honest. You look at the rosters Davis has had in the Western Conference, I think it's hard to say Davis has had a roster as good as what Boston could put around him with Kyrie and Horford and maybe a couple other pieces that don't get moved with the Davis trade in general. But you have those three. That's a great start. I'm not too worried. I think Boston's going to come strong unless, for whatever reason, Kyrie, between now and the draft, goes on social media or goes to the media in general and just declares, I hate Boston. Get me out of the city. Send me anywhere, please.
Pulls the Eric Bledsoe. I don't want to be here.
Yeah, basically. And I don't see Kyrie doing that. There's no benefit for anyone in that situation. So I'm not too worried. Do you think that Boston is going to leverage the threat of Kyrie leaving to lower the price on Davis?
I think they'll use whatever they can. If that's what it takes. And I mean, we all know, we've heard and we've seen the evidence on that, you know, what Ainge can do. And I think that Pelicans are, I feel much better with, you know, no disrespect to Demps, but I feel you've got to feel good having a guy like Griffin as your lead decision maker in a pivotal moment like this. And so while I think Ainge can and should use anything in his power to gain leverage in this situation, I have faith in the Pelicans to withstand it and get a good deal back for AD, assuming he remains adamant about leaving.
You know what's crazy to me? Now that the Celtics are out of the playoffs, there is nothing stopping the two parties from talking about this trade now.
Yeah. Right?
Both seasons are concluded. The only final domino that people are really waiting for is the lottery. And the Celtics do have like an infinitely small chance of getting the number two pick via Sacramento or jumping into the top four, right? I think if it's the top one pick, it goes back to Philly. So whatever chance they have of jumping into the top four via Sacramento they have, but like honestly, that's probably not going to be that much of a factor. Yeah, do you think they've talked? I think they probably have already made contact.
Yeah, I think so. And I so yes, the lottery is the last big thing that to change to that will change things. But I mean, there's also the KD factor. I mean, and it's I think it seems like most people are just assuming he's gone, and I'm not saying that that's wrong, because I think that is the most likely scenario based on what we've seen and heard from him, is that he's going to be out. But do you think with Kevin Durant and the Warriors, do you think that there's any scenario for them in the playoffs that makes KD more likely to stay, or do you think he's gone no matter what?
No, I think the only way he stays is if he gets a traumatic injury and he knows he needs to lock into a long-term deal.
Which people were worried about when
Well, I'm not saying that's the only way he stays, but I think that's the only way the odds shift, I think.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if Durant knows what he wants to do right now.
This is like OKC all over again. But, yeah, I mean, I like I said, yeah, he's probably gone. But I wonder if there's some sort of sequence of events leading up to the NBA Finals that makes Durant think, you know what? I could do this for a little while longer, but yeah, I mean, apart from that, it's like you said, it's the lottery. So once Tuesday night hits, there's going to be a lot of talk, and we can finally start speculating in a sort of some sort of reality, as opposed to just wondering what's going to happen.
I know we talk about the Knicks a lot. We saw a report recently that the Pelicans have quietly inquired about Kevin Knox, or not inquired about, quietly looked into / scouted or looked into his background about Kevin Knox. And then there was another report recently that the Pelicans have shown interest in, or have gathered information in, both Knox and Mitchell Robinson. So it seems like the Pelicans and the Knicks are talking. Now, I don't take much stock in this whole quietly gathered information. Like, okay, clearly it wasn't that quiet, because yeah, we found out about it. But second of all, I don't find it surprising at all that the Pelicans are talking with every potential team that can trade for Davis and looking into all of their young players / all of their players in general, establishing what their value is, establishing who they are as people, establishing if there's any other teams that might be interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they should be leaking more stuff. They should be leaking that they're talking to. I mean, it'd be great if they let loose some random team that no one's talked about yet. I mean, anything that they can do to even. I mean, I don't think that Ainge is going to fall for something like that, obviously. But anything that they can do to create leverage in their favor. I mean, I think leaking that they're talking to a couple of teams where you maybe wouldn't have expected AD to get traded to, I think that's still. I think that can and probably will happen at some point.
I have some wild card teams that I'm thinking about. But before I get to that, I want to talk about the Knicks. Do you, when you look down their roster, is there any way you trade with them if their pick isn't the number one pick and it isn't Zion?
I mean, I can't say no until I see what else is out there. But I definitely lean towards no, because I mean, there's a world where Kyrie says he's leaving and the Celtics say, even though we planned for this for years, we don't think AD will re-sign with us without Kyrie on the roster, so we don't offer a lot for him. And so there's a sequence of events that makes you still consider the Knicks package. But again, that it drops off massively if it's not even the second pick. I mean, I would consider – I don't think I'm quite as high on Morant than other people, but I still think he's the number two pick in the draft pretty clearly. But even after that, you know, it's a pretty tough sell with the Knicks package and anything three or lower, I think. But do you have any strong feelings towards, I feel like we talked about this and you don't, but do you have any, has your opinions changed at all about anyone on the Knicks roster?
No, I don't think they have. Those guys are, yeah, you know, like I like Dennis Smith more than most people. I think people don't think he's a very good player. I do think he's been put in situations where he can't really succeed. But that being said, I'm not like enamored with him. I don't think he's going to be any type of superstar. So Dennis Smith is Dennis Smith. Mitchell Robinson, again, he maybe can be a really good defensive player, but he's also the guy that fouled out in 9 minutes. So
yeah. And I think with Mitchell, McNamara was, I think, tweeting about the Knicks package of players they can possibly offer. And I think his point about Mitchell Robinson is good. It's like his floor is probably the highest of those guys, but his ceiling is also the lowest. And so, I mean, you kind of know what the worst and best case scenario is with him, I think. And so I'm not as looking as fondly on him as an asset as others might be.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that's changed for me is I've gotten to like RJ Barrett a lot more over the past few weeks than I liked in the past. I didn't really buy into him earlier, but to me, what really separates him from other wings and other players is his playmaking ability. I think he's shown the ability to make a lot of the right reads, and I think he'll excel in the NBA where there's a lot more spacing for him. The Duke team just did not have any space for him, and he was supposed to be the space creator, which he's not the best shooter. I think he'll be a shot maker, but like he's not anyone that's going to stretch defenses. I do have him over Ja Morant at the moment. Okay. I'm low on Morant, and people are going to hate me for it. I see his ceiling as very high, but I think I see his floor as terribly low because he's not a good shooter. I'm worried about his turnovers, and I'm worried about his ability to finish against NBA athletes. So I don't know. I also don't think he'll ever be a positive defender.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, I mean, how tall is he? He's decently tall, right?
He's like 6'3".
Okay. Yeah, that works. I mean, it's not great, but it's still
like,
I mean,
when you play at Murray State and you have to be hidden on defense,
it's probably not the best sign.
Yeah.
Or you could maybe spin that as he was their everything on offense, and so they wanted to make sure he could rest on defense, but that's kind of, I feel like that's less of a thing in college ball, and so that's regardless, still not a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, like, you're playing defense against other college players. It's not like you're guarding Russell Westbrook or Steph Curry all game long.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only thing that's really changed for me. I think it's funny you mentioned the Celtics maybe shying away from Davis if Kyrie walks. There was a David Aldridge report that Davis would still consider re-signing with the Celtics even if Kyrie wasn't there, which is interesting because I think David Aldridge is a really respectable guy. He has a lot of connections around the league. He's a respectable reporter, so he's not the type to make stuff up. But, I mean, that also goes against everything we've heard about Davis and Boston and what he thinks about Boston. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, he clearly hedged on his commentary too. So, like, I mean, he said, I've heard Davis wouldn't completely rule out staying with the Celtics without Irving, but the odds of him re-upping that scenario are significantly lower. So, I mean, is it really telling us anything that new? I mean, the fact that any sort of consideration to re-sign without Kyrie at all, it feels better than expected. But
I think it's absolutely new because previously there was zero consideration for re-upping in Boston. Period. Kyrie or no Kyrie?
Yes. So fair. But I feel like that was coming from his dad more than anything else, you know? I feel like AD never drew a line in the sand himself. Granted, he didn't say a lot of stuff himself during this whole process.
His own clothes.
Yeah, so again, fair point. But I didn't hear anything from him that made me really think that he felt strongly one way or the other about Boston. You heard it more from either Clutch or his dad. So I was trying to keep an open mind about that until we heard something from him. But
I don't think we'll ever hear anything from him. I'm serious. I don't think there's no point waiting around for him to make a statement that, and if he does, it's going to be putting his foot in his mouth. he needs to just not be in front of a camera.
Yeah. Microphone, whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't know. Well, we talked about wild card teams. I have a wild card team that I want to talk about. Okay. I think Atlanta could potentially surprise some people. And I know it's surprising because you're going to say, wait a minute, it makes no sense for their timeline. Is that what you were going to say?
No, I was just going to say, tell me why AD resigns in Atlanta. That was what I was going to say.
To me, that's not our problem.
Sure.
It's Atlanta's problem if they want to gamble on that or not. But I think Atlanta could try to pitch him on the culture and selling a vision with him, Trae Young, and John Collins, and a lot of cap space, because I think Atlanta enters itself into a lot of big free agent conversations. And if you look at the past few years, obviously they landed Dwight, which is but they were also in talks for Dwight before he went to Houston. They were in talks for Chris Paul at one point. Atlanta has a lot of allure. It's a fun city. There's a lot to do there. And I think that they're
paid by the city of Atlanta to say these things.
Hell no. I wish. But no, what I'm trying to say is I can see themselves talking themselves into trading for Davis because their GM's whole philosophy is about having superstars. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to his podcast on like why he traded Doncic for Trae Young and another pick, his whole philosophy was like, we need more bites at the apple. We need to get another star. We need a star, period. And I think organizations like that go after stars and worry about the rest later.
Man, obviously number one place I feel like New Orleans fans don't want him going is the Lakers. But after that, you want to take one last swing at saying screw AD. I think going to the home of the Atlanta Falcons for a lot of these New Orleans fans would be beyond the last straw. So that's an interesting X factor. And that type of mindset from their GM does make it seem like Atlanta could put themselves in the conversation. But I just – so the timeline point is good, not where my mind went at first, but there is a pretty – I mean, it's not a huge age gap, but it's enough of an age gap to make me think a little harder about it. But also, yeah, I just – that's a hell of a pitch you've got to make to AD to stick around. And they're not – I mean – even with AD, they're not a top four team in the East next year. Maybe you'll disagree with that, but I think that's...
No, I agree with that, but I think there's a couple things, right? So in Atlanta, AD is unanimously the guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trae is good. Trae is getting there. I think Trae is a great fit with a high pick and roll player like Davis is. But Davis doesn't have to worry about going to a franchise where he's not... He may be like in someone else's shadow. He's not in LeBron's shadow. He won't be Kyrie's shadow.
Mm-hmm.
It's his team. Now, you're like, oh, well, how is that different from the Pelicans? Well, again, it's a change of pace. I think they're going to try to sell their organizational culture. I think they have a lot of cap space to surround him with players that can push them close to contention. I don't know. It's a gamble from then. Again, I don't particularly care if they believe they can sell Davis or not. That's, again, not the Pelicans' problem. Sure, it's something we have to consider when we're throwing these trades. But again, we're talking about wild cards. I think they're going to enter the conversation if they don't land the number one pick, which is Zion. If they don't get Zion, I think they'll probably trade their pick as well as Dallas's pick and some salary filler they'll want to trade those two picks as well as some salary filler and maybe another pick for Davis.
Yeah, and I guess
– the assets.
Yeah, and I guess like the in a situation like that, the one thing that I feel like we don't talk about just in general as much is the fact that they can still trade AD again. Like you can go get AD this summer, and if it's pretty clear that he's definitely going to be out, you flip him at the trade deadline, and you're not going to recover everything that you traded for him. Probably,
I'm sure Boston will send you some stuff for sure.
Right, right. So I mean, there is that out, and so I think when we consider these dark horse teams like Atlanta, it's important to keep that in mind as well. And I feel like I don't do a good job of thinking about that possibility. But yeah, I mean, team could trade for AD and then flip him at the deadline, and still not. And it's a fine hedge to make.
Cool. I think that's going to be fun. We have so many hypotheticals just riding on the fact of where these ping pong balls are going to fall. It's absurd. I don't think for the Pelicans, outside of the whole Davis draft initially, there's been a bigger scenario where the ping pong balls could just drastically impact everything.
Mm-hmm. There are times where hindsight's 2020 and you realize what maybe one spot difference could have done for your franchise looking backwards. But yeah, as far as like forward looking, this is huge. And we'll be a lot smarter about everything come Tuesday evening.
Cool. Well, I think that's a good spot for us to take a break for our sponsors.
At Blue Wire, we don't just partner with any advertiser. We want to make sure we're giving our listeners a good deal on a product. That's exactly why we love doing business with Harry's. Harry's is giving Blue Wire listeners a shaving kit for just $3. Go to harrys.com/bluewire and you'll save $10 on a trial set, which includes 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. If you're not familiar with Harry's, it's time you should be. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. The founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3.
Welcome back from our sponsor break. Mason, did you get a chance to see this quote that's sort of been floating around about Gail Benson and a comment that she made during Loyola's graduation commencement?
Yeah, man. She's continuing not to hold anything back. It's refreshing.
So for those who haven't seen the quote, Gail said something along the lines of, "The way we have been operating has not worked, and we have not adapted to the dynamics of today's NBA," when she was talking about the Pelicans. There isn't much context around that quote. I haven't seen other people post it, but I don't think there really needs to be much more context around it. I think it's just more of a recognition that the way they were operating in the past did not work. And everything that they have done since the firing of Dell Demps has sort of been progressively correcting the wrongs of the past. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, and I think, so Nick Riemann, who is River Parish's reporter for the Advocate New Orleans, was the person who tweeted about this and saw her at the commencement ceremony. And I think one thing that we're not even talking about that is interesting to me is he said in the tweet, also brought up the Davis trade demand and her decision to fire some personnel, which is plural. And so I also wonder, have we heard anything about, obviously they let Dell Demps go. But is there, and I guess now that we hired Aaron Nelson, you can assume that we're letting someone go from the people in the med staff go. But do you think that's what she's talking about? Because I'm curious, it's a very vague statement about firing personnel, because that's something we haven't really heard much about. We've heard about the additions, but we haven't heard about the subtractions.
Does Danny Ferry count as a firing?
No, I don't think so, because he wasn't under contract. Right?
But why wasn't he under contract?
Well, after the season, I guess he could have been.
As far as I know, everyone in the front office is under contract for 2 more years. I could be wrong. I have no idea what Danny Ferry's agreements are like, but I think it's possible that he is let go, or it was a mutual resignation or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting, and I would love to watch the full video. I don't know if it will probably surface. I mean, they usually post some of the stuff like that on YouTube and whatnot, but I do want to watch it whenever it comes out, the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to guess, I think Misty Suri, the physician, would be let go.
Yep.
Don't know. I mean, maybe there will be more people let go now that they couldn't bring Redden on board, and they want to maybe supplant them with more depth rather than a singular guy. It's funny to me that we haven't really heard much about Redden's replacement or like who the next guy is. To me, that signals that the people they want are still on playoff teams. Or maybe I'm just being optimistic.
Yeah, I think you're being optimistic but it's the baseline logic is sound. So I don't think I think it's possible that's the case.
Speaking of hiring and firings, the Lakers have hired a new coach.
Welcome. With, in air quotes.
In the LA, where we talk about LA news on a weekly basis. They hired Frank Vogel, who agreed to come on with the Lakers organization heavily suggesting that he needs to bring on Jason Kidd. So they brought on Jason Kidd as well. They've already lined up a successor for Vogel. They're hiring him for success. And their whole idea of bringing Jason Kidd on is like, we want him to work with Lonzo, you know, the same guy they tried to trade 6 months ago. Same guy they're going to try to trade in a few weeks.
I just love the, we're a horizontal organization. It's like, we're not going to have a lead assistant. It's going to be Frank Vogel and then the rest of the coaching staff. And it's just setting up.
That means we don't want to pay them because we've already spent a lot of money. We owe Luke Walton a lot of money. We owe Magic. Well, I don't know if you owe Magic any money anymore because he left himself. But to me, that means they don't want to, they want them to do the work of elite assistants, but they do not want to pay them the money of a lead assistant.
Yeah. And it's wild after Lou walked away with the insulting offer that he got from the Lakers.
They lowballed him.
Yeah. And in years and potentially dollars. And then of course Vogel's like, yep, 3 years, line me up with LeBron. Let's do this. So the Lakers, it seemed like they didn't give a shit who the coach was within reason. They just wanted the money and the length of the contract for that coach to be right, because it's clear that they just think LeBron's the shadow coach of this team. So they don't really care who's actually has the title.
LeBron is shadow coach, Kurt Rambis and Linda Rambis as shadow owners/presidents. They have a wonderful organizational culture there.
Why wouldn't you want to go there, right?
Yep. If you're Anthony Davis will love to play there.
Oh,
what a mess.
What a mess.
What a mess. Now, last week we brought on Amin and we talked about Aaron Nelson and David Griffin and the kind of impact that those two people are going to have on the organization. McNamara, if you guys have been reading the site, put out an article recently on how the Pelicans should approach trades and free agency in terms of targets, what kind of players they should target now that they have Aaron Nelson on board to kind of maybe find a market inefficiency, and that is go after players that have maybe had some health problems and bring them on to a staff that is well-equipped to rehab them, and maybe you can acquire them for a lower price and get more value in their production. I find that really interesting because I feel like going after injured players is a market inefficiency dealt always exploited. Do you disagree?
Kind of. I think that there are some guys who who do they take on that had serious injury histories before coming to New Orleans?
I don't know what you mean by serious. I'm thinking like recurring, where they have not been healthy for several years. And I think you can, or they've had persistent problems. And I think you could point that to everyone. I think you could point that going back to Eric Gordon, but you can point that to Robin Lopez. He had some injury history.
Really?
Robin Lopez had he missed a ton of time and he didn't get healthy until he came to New Orleans, which is interesting because he left Phoenix.
I was going to say ironic because he was in Phoenix.
They went after Robin Lopez. They, you know, in the draft, they went after, Frank Jackson. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they brought in Jahlil Okafor, another guy who's had some injury issues as well as some other issues. Tyreke Evans had injury issues with the Kings. Who else? Let me think. Try to think of all of our acquisitions.
Yeah, that's the point you made about the drafts is a good point. I was thinking mostly free agency, but yeah, I mean Frank Jackson is a good example of that.
They had like Pierre Jack. No, was Pierre hurt?
Russ Smith.
I don't know.
Yeah. I just feel like there are a lot of guys who maybe had some potential red flags, but I think things kind of snowballed for whatever reason you want to point to in New Orleans. But I feel like either way, it's cool to think about this in a different way now because we actually have confidence in in Nelson and whoever he brings on to join him on his team. I hadn't really thought about it as a competitive advantage and within the lens of like, or through the lens of what player specifically to target. And so, I thought it was a good read from Mac.
Have you had a chance to think further about what kind of players you'd want to target?
So he listed out pretty much the bulk of the guys you think about when you think of injury histories. And I mean, he wrote about specifically a few of them, and the ones he wrote in a little more detail have just massive contracts for the most part, which makes things difficult. Like Blake Griffin, Kevin Love, John Wall, Chris Paul, those guys. That creates a whole new set of issues because you have to match salary and that they're taking up a decent amount of your cap. So like if you're thinking about how to add talent at low cost in terms of assets you'd give up, those guys, it's probably a good place to start.
Well, not even just assets you'd give up. You take on assets to take on some of those players. Like John Wall, you're not giving up a single asset to take.
Yep.
But if the Wizards are coming at you with their lottery pick, maybe that's a deal you consider.
Yep. Yep, I thought I think he posted a hypothetical after that. It was like, would you take on John Wall to move from number 2 pick to number 1 pick, which is a very niche hypothetical about the confluence of things that have to go right to have that situation be the case. But I thought that was a very interesting what if, and I think I would do it.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there are some other guys, MKG, Roberson.
I've always been a big MKG fan. And as far as Roberson goes, Roberson.
Yep.
As far as Roberson goes, OKC's got to do something with their roster. They are balls deep in luxury tax.
And Patterson picked up his $5.8 million, which
in luxury tax. I mean, like the repeater tax. Sorry. They have to do something. And he is probably their most tradable guy. I think we've talked about this. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, where do they move Steven Adams? Do they move Schroeder? Do they move Patterson? Like, who's going to take those players? I can see someone taking Roberson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the conversation I think we had about this was I would be much more inclined to attach an asset to Schroeder and move him.
You don't have assets.
They've got picks.
No, they don't. They owe a future pick. Their future owed picks make it difficult for them to trade additional picks. They're in a really bad situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely – it's not great. But I think that – I don't know. I think they could maneuver enough to just skirt under the tax line. But it's going to come at a cost, obviously. And so, I mean, you look at these single guys, like Patterson's going to have one more year at 5.8, and it's like, yeah, it's not great, but I don't think it's a disaster. I mean, Patterson had one bad year last year, and before that, he was actually pretty good. I think so.
I don't think so. There's nothing he does that inspires confidence.
I thought he was pretty good with Toronto, whatever it is with OKC, he hasn't been as good, obviously.
He get like when he was? So he's been with OKC 2 years now, and he's averaged his first year with OKC. He averaged 3.9 points per game. Second year with OKC, he averaged 3.6 points per game.
At least it's consistent.
So 1, 2, 3 years ago. In Toronto, he averaged 6.8 points per game and 4.5 rebounds. So he's basically Solomon Hill.
Dude, come on. That's not fair.
But
he's been like – so not looking at his raw stats, he's been a guy – I just remember in Toronto, like he was a big – I feel like he was a big plus-minus guy. And like he was in a bunch of their best lineups. And so, yeah, I mean, you're not going to
have to do with their other players. I don't know. I've never been a fan of Patterson. Toronto hasn't missed a beat when they let go of Patterson. I think when they got PJ Tucker, who outplayed him and replaced him essentially on the back half of the year. I mean,
well, PJ Tucker is a lot better. I've never seen
him as a key component to any roster.
I'm not trying to say that. My only point with that was that he's getting paid 5.7 or 5.8 mil for the last year of his contract, and like. You probably have to attach a second to him, but like, I don't think that's I think somebody would happily take him plus a second, next season. Like, I don't think it's that devastating. And obviously, and the amount of the salaries you'd have to shed to get under the tax line are, So you would trade, and I think you won me over on this one. I was pushing back on trading Jeremy Grant, and eventually I think I agreed with you that, yeah, you probably have to trade Jeremy Grant to get under. But I think you also feel like, similar to Patterson, you don't think Grant's that good either.
No, I think he needs a very situational roster to excel, and very few teams provide that. I think he does all the right things in terms of hustling and rebounding and all that, but he's best as a small ball five, in my opinion. And you need shooters around him to excel, or you put him in lineups that are similarly small and that can space the floor.
He made 39% of his threes last year. Is that, do you think it's a fluke?
I don't think it adds any value.
Interesting. Okay. I'm speaking from a point of I'm only pushing back because he was on my fantasy basketball team last year, and he did some good stuff for my team. But
I mean, it's like when Dante Cunningham hit 40% of his threes.
Yeah, what does it matter, right?
Right.
Fair enough. But so we got onto this weird OKC tangent after trying to talk about Max article. But
I like Roberson. I think Roberson would be a good get for a team like the Pelicans, especially if I don't think if you trade with Boston, I don't think you can have both Smart and Roberson on the same team. I mean, it'd be unreal defense with Smart, Drew, and Roberson, but you just would not score at all. But I would like Roberson if you have Tatum. You know, that'd be
fun. Fun fact, I just Googled Roberson to see how old he was because I didn't know for sure. He has six siblings, and all of their names start with A. So they've got Andre, Anthony, Ariel, Ashley, Aaliyah, Ariana, and Amber.
Fun. That's got to be a good time for that family. Good for them.
Yeah, I had to present that fun fact. But, yeah, I mean, I agree. I would – obviously, the point of the article is to find guys who have had – who've been pretty injured that could maybe be a market inefficiency. And I feel like, yeah, of those guys, I think Roberson is maybe the prime – get, because he's expiring next year too. I think he's got like $10 million next year, and then that's it. So I did laugh when I saw Boogie's name on there, because that's just not going to happen. But
if you want Drew on this team, you don't get Boogie.
Yeah,
that's the deal.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so other names like Exum, like I just feel like he not only has he been injured a ton, he also hasn't shown enough for me to want to go get him on the money he's getting paid. It's just, that doesn't make sense to me. But
yeah, to me, if you can get those guys and get assets for them, sure.
Yeah.
But if you have to give up something for them, hell no.
Yeah, yeah. With you. And then I think Denzel Valentine's an interesting one. He was a very, very old rookie, comparatively speaking. But he can handle. I think the Bulls were playing him at point guard for some of the time when he was healthy most recently, but maybe a little bit out of necessity, but still, I mean, shows he can handle a little bit. And
I think he can shoot. I think he's an underrated shooter.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, I just think, so go to the website if you haven't read it yet. I think it's an interesting concept. And while, yeah, again, some of these guys are on pretty hefty salaries, so you would want to take on assets in addition to these guys. But there are some names on there, and I'm sure there are other names too that could make sense through this lens. So just interesting stuff.
You know, looking at Denzel Valentine, you could probably get him to be your next Etuan Moore.
Again, from the Bulls.
Yeah, I mean, he's a better rebounder and passer, but there, in terms of like athleticism and stuff, sure. You'd be your next Etuan Moore, a better Etuan. I can't wait till we trade Etuan. Oh my god!
Mr. Untradeable.
All of my trades, all of my hypothetical trades that I text friends, and I'm like, all right, we're gonna trade with the Celtics. We're gonna attach Jaylen Brown, and we're gonna send Etuan for salary, and boom, we're gonna get someone else. It's gonna be great. If we start next year and Etuan Moore is our starting two guard or starting three, I will probably quit my fandom.
That's a weird hill to die on, man. That's a weird hill to die
on. I'm sorry. I've seen too much of him. Why? There's no reason he should be starting anymore for the team going forward.
I am in agreement. If he's the team starting three guard or starting three next year, like that's something happened poorly. But obviously because of
Anthony Davis is coming back. Yeah.
yeah. Maybe so. But yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't start an uprising if he was starting a two guard to start the year. But obviously, it's not. I don't think that's something I would.
Oh, I would start an uprising. We would protest like the Lakers are protesting.
I mean, like
better what signs.
What if they got like, I don't know, Tatum and Brown, not smart, and then whatever else picks, and so they didn't get a two guard in the trade, and each one more just kind of left.
Well, you said you get Tatum and Brown. Why don't you just start both of those guys?
You would, but I thought maybe there'd be you'd consider starting them at three and the four rather than the two and the three. But I mean, I guess you could do either.
You do whatever it takes not to start each one, Mason.
Fair enough.
It's that simple. Okay, well, I think we don't have much to talk about. One last topic I do want to address is we didn't get a chance to tackle it the last podcast, but there was some unfortunate news regarding local coverage mm-hmm. in which the Advocate has purchased the Times, Picayune, and NOLA.com. And by doing so, they have let go of all of the staff that was with the Times-Picayune. Now, it's unfortunate for all the people that were employed there, but it's particularly unfortunate for us because the Times-Picayune had a great Pelicans reporter in Andrew Lopez who worked his tail off to provide the best coverage for the Pelicans. Now, I don't know the direction the Advocate is going to take Pelicans coverage going forward, but I think we as fans need to do our best to express to them that coverage is needed. We need guys like Andrew on the job to continue to provide us with the information around the organization and to continue to do the great job they've done in the past. And this is something that's wanted. This is something that people are interested in, because if we kind of let this go silently into the night, then I think it impacts the rest of us as a fan base. The less knowledgeable and dedicated people covering the team, the worse we are as a fan base.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought this up, and I think it's a great topic to end on. Because I'm in town this weekend. I have to be in Dallas for work on Monday, and so I came in town for Mother's Day, and I shot Andrew a text last night to see what he was up to, and he said, long story short, is he couldn't hang because he was driving to Sulphur. He said, got to drive to Sulphur in the morning to help out with baseball coverage. And no, he didn't have to do that. Like, he chose to, despite, like, all the shit that's going on. Like, he's just beyond all the good stuff he's done for the Pelicans, the guy's a team player. He's just such – I've never worked with him as a coworker, but he just – it seems like he's the perfect – a perfect guy to work with. And it's beyond frustrating to me what's happened. I mean, don't get me started on the acquisition in the first place, just as a means to kill competition. But I feel so badly for him. But I know, you know, we've like you said, you put it great. That we've got to kind of rally behind him and make sure that we're creating a place where we can have a few different Pelicans writers and to create anytime we can. Increase the knowledge of the fan base overall is a good thing for everybody. And I think Andrew is one of the best at doing that. And so, again, I have no doubt he'll land on his feet, but I think it was great that you brought that up and we can talk about it and rave about how great of a person and how great of a columnist Andrew is.
Yep. And with that, we conclude this podcast.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.